2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Get your questions answered by the governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the governor on KSL News Radio.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor, Maria Chalaios, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Again, you can call us at 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Let's go right back to our phone lines. Looks like water is going to be the topic of the day. Alan is in West Valley. Good afternoon, Alan.
Hello.
Go ahead, Alan. What is your question for the governor?
Yeah, I was just curious why we didn't put in AstroTurf at the brand new prison and put grass and a lot of it out at the new prison.
Yeah, thank you, Alan, for the question. So we are working with all of our buildings to make sure that we have minimal grass now on new construction. And so there is some grass out there, but greatly reduced from what we had at the other site. And certainly we'll continue to look at that. I appreciate your concern. We did pass a bill this year that requires us to actually remove turf and reduce turf in many locations. So you'll certainly be seeing more of that. There will be some, but hopefully a lot less than you've noticed in the past.
And then, Alan, did you have
Yeah, I have another question also. The state of Utah has got so much money. Why don't we build a factory to make AstroTurf for everyone to use at their homes to take out portions of their grass?
Well, thank you. So we usually don't, as government, we aren't in the in the business of manufacturing or producing things. That's not what government does. Certainly we'll allow the private sector to do that, and we hope that as more and more people start looking at different ways to make their homes and their yards beautiful, that those businesses will be successful and there will be opportunities for that. Not everyone wants AstroTurf. There are certainly other ways to do this as well, and there are some great examples of this in southern Utah and more in northern Utah all the time that show that there are ways to landscape not using AstroTurf, but with natural shrubs and trees and natural flowers that are native species to our area that are very drought resistant, that require less water and actually are more beautiful than some of the lawns that we have right now. So this is going to take some time. Certainly, it's a paradigm shift. It's a mind shift for most of Utahns. But we're headed in a much more positive direction than we were in the past. And I will just say, we had last year we had cities and we had HOAs that made you put grass in. You couldn't choose one of these other options. And so we're making that first big step. And I think it's a big step in the right direction.
Governor, our next listener wants to know, they say they're curious about where all the rainwater goes when we have showers. They see it rolling down the gutters into storm drains, and they're wondering if there isn't a way to capture and use it for drinking water, et cetera.
Yeah, so we actually do allow that in the state of Utah for individuals, and homes can do that. There are some requirements because we can't capture all of that. What happens to it is it actually flows back to places where it's needed. So it ends up in, sometimes in some places it ends up in the Great Salt Lake, and it will end up in Utah Lake and other places. And so you don't want to stop completely that natural cycle of water getting to where it needs to go. Other places it goes into the ground where it is filtered and then gets down back into the aquifer below the ground. But there are more and more people are starting to collect rainwater to use to water their lawns, and that's something that we encourage that and hope that people will do more of.
Our next caller is Todd in Spanish Fork. Good afternoon, Todd. What is your question?
Governor Cox, thanks for taking my call. I'll make it brief. Over the last few years, we've heard some talk about certain California cities compensating residents for grass replacement. Roughly a year ago, I decided to replace up to 50% of my grass. I have about an 8,000 square foot lot. And so it wouldn't be huge, but if a lot of us did it, it would be very beneficial. So I began calling to find out more about rebates. I called my city, the county, and the state, and I was assured or told by these government entities that no program similar to what I was asking about existed in Utah as of yet. So I went ahead and I've either completed much of that replacement or I am currently in the process, and it's a little expensive and it is very labor intensive. But when I finally got directed to the Central Utah Water Conservancy District, they told me that unfortunately, because I had already started or had completed these projects, that I would not be eligible for the rebate. And I was very disheartened once I finally found the entity that was overseeing the rebates. I was told that I was not eligible because I had already completed those, but yet the end result is still the same. I'm doing my part to help reduce water consumption at my home.
Yeah. Todd, let me say thank you for doing your part. That's a huge deal, and I'm so sorry that that process was confusing. And I appreciate the question, and I appreciate the feedback. That's very helpful. And water can be a little confusing in the state of Utah, and so I want to be really clear to everyone about how this works. So first of all, we've never had a statewide program for flipping the strip or replacing water. Grass with something more water wise like you have done, and that's something I've really pushed for is some help from the state. So this year finally we were able to get that through the legislature, and they set aside some money to help with that as well. It's a program that is still in development and will be implemented by fall, possibly sooner. We're working really hard to get that implemented. There has been a lot of interest in this program, and we're excited to finally launch the first statewide turf buyback program in our state. There was $5 million for turf removal that was set aside for and drought resistant landscaping. We're in the process of building that, but the law that we passed, that the legislature passed, just to help people who are trying to follow your example, you must have living lawn or turf on the land owned by the owner that the owner intends to replace with drought resistant landscaping, which makes sense. You have to be in good standing with your retail water provider, so you can't have unpaid bills. It has to be voluntarily. You have to participate voluntarily. Can't be required by government code or policy. And owners may not receive an incentive if the owner has previously received one or more for the same property. So it's just one per person, one per property. And there may be some additional ones. Again, we're hoping to get that out soon. Now for what you went through, and this is important for everybody else who's looking at this right now, and that is anything. Dealing with water on your property, always go to your water conservancy district, the water district that you live in. Right now, there is some flip the strip money available in local districts. You mentioned Central Utah Water Conservancy District; that is one of those. And I feel bad that you weren't directed there until afterwards. The Jordan Valley Water Conservancy District is another one, and Weber Basin is another one. So we would encourage people. You can go online to UtahWaterSavers.com and find out more about those programs in your area. But I'm sorry, it's too little too late for you, Todd. But again, thank you for what you've done. And for everybody else, there will be more details coming soon on the statewide program.
All right, Todd, thanks for your call today. We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. We'll be taking your calls again when we come back, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio, 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. I'm Maria Chalaos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. Again, the number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. Governor, good afternoon. I understand that today you have declared a drought emergency, and tell us exactly what that means.
Well, Maria, thank you. It's great to be with you again, and always great to be able to talk with callers and the citizens of Utah. So, sadly, we've as we've looked at the drought situation, we got another update this week. The winter weather patterns didn't go as we had hoped, and so the drought continues. Right now, almost 100% of the state, 99% of the state, is in severe drought, which is the third drought category out of five. So that's serious, and something that's deeply concerning to us, and we rely so much on reservoirs, and the problem is we're starting at a deficit because of how dry it was last year, and what we know is this is the worst 20-year drought in the western United States in over 1,200 years. That's how serious this drought has been over time. So we're starting with a deficit, which means that we needed an above-average year to be able to reduce the drought conditions, and we didn't get that. We had a great December, but January was terrible. February was one of the worst on record. March was okay, but it was warmer, so some of the snow started to melt. April has been good. That's a positive. There is some positive news out there. We have another big storm coming, it looks like, on Friday and into Saturday, which is good news. But these spring storms have not done nearly enough to help us get our snowpack. It's about 75% of normal right now. And our reservoirs are only about 59% of capacity right now. So we wanted to do this early in the season, declare this drought. It does a couple things. One, it opens up resources for our water districts, but most importantly, again, it's a signal to our water districts and to the citizens of the state that we're going to have to be very careful this year, that we are going to have to conserve again. And I just can't say enough about how great our state was last year, far exceeding our highest expectations in their willingness to be careful, to use less water, to let our lawns be a little more yellow than green at times, and all of that translated into billions of gallons of water savings. I have to give a shout out to our farmers as well, who cut back in very significant ways, and will be expected to do so again this year. And that hurts, you know, not just them. It hurts their livelihoods and their employees. But they understand how important this is, and so we're going to have to do more with less. And the legislature, who passed just incredible legislation this year to help us conserve more. So I'm very optimistic about our ability to do this again this year, but. We do want people to know from the very beginning that every drop saved, as we start to turn on our sprinklers in, you know, the end of April and into May, that we need to be careful as we use that water.
You mentioned specifically letting our lawns get a little bit yellow, that kind of thing. What else specifically can we do, though, to conserve water? What are you hoping?
So those are the big ones. It really is. We spend an extraordinary amount of water watering grass. I mean, obviously, we can all be more careful, you know, how long we're in showers and those types of things, and I would certainly encourage people. I know some municipalities have asked families to try to save, you know, 5 gallons a day, something like that. Those are very helpful, but the greatest water use happens in two areas. One, watering our lawns, of course, and then the agriculture community is another big piece of this. And so we passed legislation to continue programs, expand programs greatly to help our agriculture community to implement technology that uses much less water. That that will also save billions of gallons of water and not hurt agriculture output. So there are lots of things we can do, but those are the big ones that will make the biggest impact. And of course, we're looking at ways to flip the strip, as they say. We have a lot of grass in the state that is unnecessary. You know, park strips around restaurants and fast food places, businesses that it only gets walked on when people are mowing it. To use water-wise landscapes, we passed a law that will make it so cities and HOAs can't require people to have grass. We also passed laws that will make government much more efficient. So we have a big obligation to cut back and to have less lawn, use less water in government facilities. So all of those things will really add up over time.
You mentioned how the declaration helps you with resources. We have James on the line right now who has a question specifically about that. Good afternoon, James.
Well, good afternoon, Maria, and good afternoon, Governor. Anyhow, I did want to talk about your water drought emergency declaration. I just want to know if there's any plans in the way of infrastructure to possibly, you know, dredge existing rivers or whatever, and also build or enlarge dams to catch water once we get it.
Yeah, James, thank you for bringing that up. And you're right, I didn't mention that yet, but that is the other important piece of this. So we have been working with our Division of Natural Resources, Department of Natural Resources, excuse me, and they are working with our water managers throughout the state to identify and prioritize those areas where it makes sense to continue to build reservoirs. That's something, again, we would not exist as a society today in Utah without the foresight that went into the reservoirs that were built many, many years ago. And we have an obligation to the next generation to carry that forward. So the answer is yes, we'll be working with the federal government as well. There is some funding that was included in the infrastructure bill that will allow us hopefully to implement some of these water projects in the state. So getting water stored and then to the places. We're also doing something over the past few years that actually has not been done in the past, and that is storing water underground. So taking water recharging the aquifers that are underneath us. There's some great projects happening in Iron County where they are doing that, and that's a great way to store water because they really are underground lakes, and there's no evaporation that happens underground, so it's actually a more efficient way to store water. So we'll be doing more of that. But you're exactly right. We have to continue to think long term, making sure that our kids and grandkids can live here, and the way we do that is the same way it was done by the pioneers who came before us, and that's making sure that we have enough water storage. And by the way, dredging is also happening. And there's one other thing that I would add to that. It's making sure that we're treating the places where we get our water. So the rivers and streams that feed into these reservoirs and lakes, often there are invasive species of plants that grow up around them, and they suck water out of the rivers and out of the ground. So by going in and treating those, by removing those invasive species, more water actually gets to the lakes and the reservoirs. That's better for wildlife, and it's certainly better for humans as well.
Governor, you aren't mentioning any specific restrictions, but do you foresee a scenario in the near future where we might actually have to have some stiff restrictions?
Yeah, so for sure. We anticipate that there will be restrictions, and those all happen at the local water district level just because the water capacity, storage, and usage in every district is a little different. So we don't do statewide restrictions. We never have. And again, we proved last year that it's better to do it that way. So we work very closely with those water managers in every district. They're communicating with residents in those districts, and they will let them know when those water restrictions come into place. But I do believe that last year every single water district in the state did implement some sort of water restrictions. I can tell you where I live in Sampy County, there will be water restrictions on our farm and our lawns as well very soon, as early as June. But I do anticipate, and I will say, the water restrictions are less likely to come into into place if we're very careful at the beginning of the year. So right now, through most of Utah, with the exception of southern Utah, there is no reason to be watering our lawns right now. We've had plenty of storms. The ground is very wet, and with this big storm coming up, that's going to buy us another week where we won't need to water our lawns. So the longer we wait to start watering our lawns, the later those restrictions will come into place. And I always like to remind people that your lawn actually does better with less water. When we water too often, then the roots get very shallow, and the lawn needs more water and dies more easily. When we water less frequently, those roots grow deeper into the ground, and then when they get a good soaking, the lawn can stay greener for longer.
Governor, one of our texters is asking if we still ship water out of state from Utah.
We do not ship water out of state of Utah. I mean, with a couple exceptions. So generally we do not. Now we do have federal water storage facilities, and that happens. Lake Powell, of course, being one of those. So when those giant reservoirs are used for a couple areas, Flaming Gorge is another one. So they are discharged, and they are part of the Colorado River system. Those systems, of course, there are water rights that belong to states. We have upper basin states and lower basin states, and by the way, not just states, but Mexico as well has some water rights on the Colorado River. And so that water, while we're not shipping it out of state, it does flow naturally out of state, and so we have a long system of treaties and water rights that we respect and that we follow. And so those changes will be happening. There will be some releases from Flaming Gorge that will go down to Lake Powell, that will increase the flows into Lake Powell, which will help to continue to generate power. And by the way, that is power that does come to Utah and other states, and is very important. And then that water will continue on. And so we continue to follow those. There was a big dispute over water that was going to be taken out of the West Desert areas, the Snake River areas, and taken into Nevada and some of those different locations, and then piped into Las Vegas. But we worked to protect the water rights of the people in Utah to make sure that water wasn't being pumped out of that basin and into other places. But we don't ship water from Utah outside of Utah, but it does flow from Utah and our mountains into other states.
All right, we need to take a break. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. More on Let Me Speak to the Governor coming up.
This hour, it's Let Me Speak to the Governor. Governor Spencer Cox answers questions from KSL and from you. Call now, 801-575-8255. Let Me Speak to the Governor, live from the studios of KSL News Radio 102.7 FM and 1160 AM.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us for Let Me Speak to the Governor. Maria Chalaios, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Governor, our next caller is Jim in Mount Pleasant. Good afternoon, Jim. What is your question?
Hey, Governor. Jim in Mount Pleasant, right next door to you here. But I am a coach here locally, and my question is, we watched our, it could have been your granddaughter, it was my daughter that graduated from middle school. Your policy on gender athletes, allowing those to compete against a biological male competing against a biological female, and why you really think that's appropriate, or if it's more just a political coat that you're wearing. And the reason is it's devastating. And I think it would be devastating to you if your child, as mine, graduated, had to compete against biological males in this forum. Is your policy still the same?
Jim, thanks for the question. I released a 4.5-page letter on this. It's pretty clear that you didn't read it. I wished you had, because if you had read it, you would have learned what my real policy is instead of intimating that there's some other policy out there. I also know that there are no transgender kids participating in sports against your granddaughter, nor my daughter, because there is only one in high school in the entire state. And that's exactly what this was about. It wasn't about whether or not biological males should be able to participate with biological females. If you had read the letter, I also think you wouldn't have, you don't want to bankrupt the Utah High School Athletic Association, and you certainly don't want to bankrupt the schools where our kids go. And you know who agreed with me that bill had problems? Every single Republican in the legislature agreed with me, because they had to change the bill because they screwed up. It was a terrible bill. It was passed in a terrible way, and it only impacted one person in the state. That was my problem with the bill. I said in my letter that I have serious concerns about transgender females taking scholarships away from biological females, dominating competitions like we had seen with the swimmer out of Penn. So again, you're putting words into my mouth or not understanding exactly what it is that we did. Nowhere did I say I think it's a great idea to have biological males participating in girls' sports. I've never said that. I don't believe that, and I know you don't believe that either. But see, we have this thing where we're getting dumber as a society because we can't have real conversations with people. It's either, hey, if you don't agree 100% with this bill, that means you think that boys should be participating in girls' sports and you think boys should be in locker rooms. That's just not true. And I'm so disappointed in people who don't have the ability to have real conversations and actually engage in what we're talking about here. So that's my problem with what happened. And if you go back and read that letter, I think you'll better understand what my actual position is and how damaging that bill was to our schools and to the High School Athletic Association. Fortunately, I was able to call a special session. I was able to convince the legislature that again, every Republican needed to vote to change that bill so that we could at least reimburse our schools and our high school athletic association for the lawsuit that is coming. We have Idaho, who is already has this lawsuit. They're 2 years ahead of us in that lawsuit. And by the way, the judge stayed the implementation of the law, so transgender kids can still participate in sports in Idaho, even though they're spending millions of dollars on this lawsuit. To me, it made much more sense to let that lawsuit play out and then make a decision where it wasn't impacting really anyone in the state at all. But because people want to get engaged in these culture wars and people want to get so fired up about an issue that's really not impacting anyone in the state of Utah, it's just sad to me that we can't have better dialogue and better conversations.
All right, Governor, our next listener is asking, if we don't have enough water for the citizens that we have now in Utah, should we quit building more and more houses?
Well, that's really easy for people to say. If you don't want your kids to live here, you don't want anyone else to live here. Look, that's not how this works, and it's not how it should work. We have water. We just have to use it more responsibly, and we have the ability to store more water. If we had taken that approach, no one would live here in the state of Utah, because there wasn't enough water for the first settlers that landed here. That's not how we do things. We're better. We're much more innovative than that. I get really frustrated with people. I always say that, an environmentalist is somebody who built their cabin last year and now doesn't want anybody else to enjoy what they get to enjoy. This is an incredible state, and we're smart enough as a people. We're innovative enough as a people to tackle hard things. In fact, that's how we became a state. I'm always so impressed with with those settlers that came here. My great-great-great-grandfather was an engineer. His job was to find ways to get water in some of the most impossible places. He helped to do that in Sampi County. He helped to do that even farther south in the Kane County area, places where they thought it would be impossible possible to live in Mount Carmel and that area, where they engineered some incredible feats to store water and then get water to places where it normally wouldn't go. And so that's the type of innovation that we need. As a society, far too often we've stopped doing the big things. I mean, you look at these incredible feats, Lake Powell and the Hoover Dam, that allowed these desert areas to have population centers. That's the America I believe in, not the America that just throws up our hands and says, oh, you know what, this is too hard or we can't do it. So we're going to continue to innovate. We're definitely going to make sure that this is a state where my kids and my grandkids can live, and I think that's what most Utahns expect and want.
All right, Governor, we need to take a break. We'll come back with more of your questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. You are listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor.
Get your questions answered by the Governor.
Call 801-575-8255
to join Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio.
Thanks for being with us this afternoon, Maria Chaleos, along with Utah Governor Spencer Cox. And let's go back to the phone lines. Brent is in Salt Lake City. Good afternoon, Brent. What is your question?
Yes, thank you for taking my call, Governor. I had a question on credit card fraud. And I was wondering if there's anything on the books right now that could force merchants to check ID with all credit cards to kind of slow down this credit card fraud that's happening throughout the country.
Well, Brent, thanks for the question. And certainly credit card fraud has been a problem for a while, and that continues. And with all fraud, we certainly share those concerns. The problem with requiring IDs at every transaction, I think you can see how very quickly how difficult that becomes, how slow that process would take constantly. I mean, you mentioned retail, but there are so many other ways that people use credit cards and spend credit cards. Obviously, online is where most people do their shopping now, which makes it just that much more difficult. And you can just imagine if every single transaction you ever made with a credit card that you had to show an ID, how difficult that would be. But we are trying to do more to protect people from fraudulent purchases. And we do have laws in place that when you report fraud timely to the credit card company, there is protection there. Most of the fraud prevention is actually done by banks and credit card companies. So they're changing constantly and getting better at this. So the chip technology and those codes, those CVV codes on the back of your card are all efforts to combat fraud. Most fraud doesn't happen when somebody actually steals a credit card, right? It happens when they steal the credit card number and your information. So having that chip technology and those types of things are actually helpful. Utah does have a robust effort to protect fraud consumers from fraud. We have a Division of Consumer Protection, and if you log on with them, and you can actually get updates online as well. They regularly issue scam alerts, and they have an online portal where you can lodge complaints that helps them investigate and kind of pick up on some of these scams. That's where one of the things, unfortunately, here in Utah is that we do see higher levels, not of credit card fraud, but of more affinity fraud and other things with Ponzi schemes and trusted individuals that trick us into because we're very kind and generous people, and we want to help people and believe the best in people. So you'll get random phone calls from people who pretend to be someone they're not. That's something we're very worried about, and we issue those consumer protection releases very frequently. So you can go to consumerprotection.utah.gov, and there's a whole bunch of information on there, how to protect you, how to protect your credit cards and your families from any fraudulent activity. Thank you for the great question, Brent.
Governor, next listener wants to know, we have several listeners talking about the affordability of housing and what the state may be doing to make housing more affordable, especially houses.
Yeah. This is something that I've been very concerned about. We had another good legislative session working on these issues. So really, there's only two ways to decrease the price of housing. You either have to decrease demand or you have to increase supply. Decreasing demand is not fun. That's the bad part. And actually, that's what we're seeing nationally. So with inflation happening so much, including within the housing market, the feds have started raising interest rates. And the whole reason you raise interest rates is to make money more expensive and to kill demand. And so that is sadly, for the wrong reasons, that's one way that we will see a decrease in demand and we will start to see prices come down because people can't afford now a high interest rate loan. But that's not good for people, right? That's not what we want. So our focus in our state is on increasing supply. And that's what we were able to do with the legislature this year. And in the last 2 years, really, we've passed several laws around helping increase supply, having density in areas where density makes sense, not everywhere, but just in areas where we have good transportation infrastructure so that we don't lower the quality of life for people that live. And there are people who do want to live, believe it or not. There are people who want to live in more dense areas. And for those of us who like to have more space, again, increasing the availability of housing in those areas. We're also working to decrease the fees that government puts on housing. That's one thing that makes housing more expensive when you have to pay all these fees. So we're working, that's mostly at the local government level, but we have passed some laws to reduce requirements, housing requirements in some of those areas. Senator Mike Lee is working on with the federal government right now to try to be able to use some of the public lands that are inside of city limits or just outside of city limits to make it so those pieces can be these aren't national parks and the beautiful areas, but places where people assume that development will happen. All of those things, increasing the amount of supply, will help lower the price of housing. And we also got about $75 million in low-income housing funds to help us build more low-income housing in the state, which will also help reduce the price of housing. So we're all working together to try to make that happen.
Governor, next caller is Wendy in Orem. Good afternoon, Wendy. What is your question?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Wendy.
Are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hi. Okay. I was going to ask for your help. I work at the Utah State Hospital, and I'm talking about the water that they use to water their grounds. And will you please help encourage them? I don't know how to really say it, but they water too much. I have pictures of water just running down the sidewalk. I work until 12 o'clock from 5 to 12:30, and I've seen them water three times in that amount of time. And they say it is because it's from a spring, but to me, it's still water.
Sure. Yeah. Thank you, Wendy, for sharing that with me. And I will. We'll make a phone call right after this is done and get in touch with them. That is a state government facility and certainly something that is important to us. In fact, my team is just relaying those concerns to our Department of Health and Human Services who oversees that and they'll get right on that. And that's what I do appreciate is that all of us have to do our part. And sometimes as government entities, we make those mistakes too. And you can actually report water waste at water.utah.gov, where the report is then forwarded to the local provider for follow-up. And our goal is to educate and help correct any problems. So if you see a leak or overspray happening, you mentioned overspray where it's running down the sidewalks, that's something that always worries me. And all of that will help us to reduce waste. And I want to make sure any complaints we receive are not released to the general public, but we handle that just at the local level to help them know that there's been a report of waste and to try to help to fix that. So thank you so much. We don't know how long this drought will last. That's certainly out of our control. But what is in our control is how we use this water, how each of us respond as farmers, as government, as individuals, families, businesses, all of us really working together to use less. And your report to me today will be helpful because we'll get right on that. Thank you so much, Wendy.
And Governor, we just have 2 minutes left in the program, so I'll ask you this question about COVID in Utah, what you believe the stance is here in Utah, and about the mask mandate that's being appealed by the federal government.
Sure. So again, our numbers are very low right now, which is great news for everyone in Utah. Our vaccination rates continue to climb, and we've talked to some of our team, our public health team members, this week, and they still feel very good about where we are. We have seen some increases in states along the East Coast, but those were fairly mild increases that have started to come back down. They're not worried about any significant surges anytime soon here in the state of Utah. So just good news all the way around. I'm actually very supportive of lifting of the mask mandates. Of course, we did that here in the state of Utah a long, long time ago. And so I think it's about time. We actually have a trade mission in Mexico that we're headed to shortly. And I'm very excited that I'll be able to fly down there and not have to wear a mask. As somebody who's fully vaccinated and boosted, still encourage people, if you haven't gotten boosted, to do that. I think it's the right call, and certainly the right decision, and all of the data says that as well. Airplanes are incredibly well ventilated, better than most public spaces that we are in. At the same time, most people are wearing cloth masks, which we know don't really do much anyway. And then people are taking off their masks to eat and drink on the airplane anyway. So if you really believe in masks and masking up, then you shouldn't be taking it off to eat and drink, because then of course the virus is just spreading anyway. And the last thing I would say is there's nothing preventing you from wearing a mask. And what we do know is a high quality mask, an N95 mask, and some people are even double masking, actually does preserve a high level of protection, even if people around you aren't masked. So if you are high risk, or if you are still worried, or if you're not vaccinated and you're worried about that, there is nothing preventing you from wearing a mask. And I just hope, as I've said many times, that we would just respect each other and our decisions, whether you decide to mask or not.
Governor, thank you so much for spending an hour every month with us and taking listeners' questions and calls. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Maria.
And we'll see you next month. And you've been listening to Let Me Speak to the Governor on KSL News Radio. Boyd Matheson, Inside Sources, follows the top of the hour news.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.